Magandang araw, Podmates! Howie Severino muli na nagpapaalala na nakakatalino ang mahabang attention span. Our guest today is Professor Miriam Coronel Ferrer, the newest Ramon Magsaysay awardee from the Philippines for her work as peace negotiator. And she was the first female chief negotiator in the world to sign a final peace accord with a rebel group, the 2014 Comprehensive Agreement on the Bangsamoro with the Moro Islamic Liberation Front, which I will be referring to later as the MILF. Magandang araw sa iyo, Professor Ferrer. Congratulations on your award and the landmark achievement of the peace accord with the MILF.
Yes, and actually, thank you very much, Howie, and marami salamat to be one of your guests in your podcast series. We're actually celebrating, marking the 10th year of the signing of the Comprehensive Agreement on the Bangsamoro on March 27. So that's a landmark. Maski na naging mabagal talaga yung implementation, alam naman natin napasa yung batas to create the new Bangsamoro Autonomous Government only 4 years after we signed the agreement. Medyo mabagal yun, but at least so far, this infrastructure is in place. At inaabangan na natin yung magiging regular elections sa 2025.
So dito sa pag-aabang mo, are you involved in an official way? Or are you more of an observer? Or are you advising on any part of the process so far?
Wala akong official designation ever since. As you know, dalawang presidente na yung nakaraan mula ng termino ni President Simeon Benigno Aquino III, no, the late Pinoy. But somehow naman, maski pa paano, nakakausap ko sila, nakakausap ko yung government panel ngayon. Nagtatanong sila tungkol sa ano ba talaga yung napag-usapan kasi alam naman natin, pagdating sa implementation, marami pa rin negosasyon yan eh. Kung paano talaga i-implement. So, ganun lang, informal capacity. Mas abala ako ngayon sa iba't iba pang mga lugar kung saan may pagsisikap din na magkaroon ng peace process.
Yeah, okay. Magtatanong ako tungkol sa mga sa iyong ibang activities. No, I know you've been very busy even if you've officially retired as a UP professor. Gusto ko lang magtanong tungkol dito sa sinasabi mong medyo mabagal yung implementation. No? But yung pinirmahan nga nung 2014, it was a comprehensive agreement, but it was also considered a peace accord, no? It's a peace deal, no? So, ang basic tanong dyan is, has there really been peace, no? Tumigil talaga yung labanan. Hindi na nagbabakbakan yung military, government military forces at saka yung MIL.
Kung sa pagitan ng dalawang partido, definitely, wala tayong major confrontation. Meron tayong mga incidents. Killings na nangyari in the course of say some criminal interdiction activities ng police, no? So may nadadawit dyan na MILF member, combatant halimbawa, at saka meron din mga nabalita na nakaraan, pero yung talagang bakbakan kung saan ay libo-libo, daan libong mga tao ang nadi-displace, hindi yan nangyari yan dati sa panahon ni President Erap Estrada. At saka nung nag-breakdown yung talks, di ba, nung dinown ng Supreme Court yung Memorandum of Agreement on Ancestral Domain, taas-taas ng ano natin, ranking natin doon sa bilang ng internally displaced people sa buong mundo. Tapos syempre, may iba pa rin naman kaguluhan. There's the conflict with the other armed groups na iba na yung ideolohiya. Yung tinatawag natin, siguro, violent extremist groups, sometimes tinatawag silang jihadist movements na may iba-iba ng ideolohiya, kaya nakita natin yung nangyari sa Marawi. Pero yung sa trahedya na nangyari sa Marawi, hindi kasama doon ang MILF. Sa katunayan, tumulong pa nga sila doon sa pag-release ng mga hostages. No? Tumulong sila kasama ang government sa pag-device ng ways and means na ma-save yung ibang mga civilians na natrap dito.
Yung nangyari nga sa Marawi, no, kasi I went there 3 times then to cover the conflict and also the aftermath. A year after nagbumalik ako, no. So it was a reminder na kahit nagkaroon na ng peace deal with the MILF, no, marami pa ring conflict sa Mindanao which have not been addressed, no. Pero gusto ko lang balikan tong MILF, no, kasi nga while you were still working in the government correct me if any of these facts are wrong, no? Nagkaroon na ng ceasefire agreement and then there was a signing of the Comprehensive Peace Accord. Nangyari naman yung Mamasapano, no, in 2015, which almost ruined everything, which almost ruined much of your work, no, the government's work for peace, no? So can you bring us back to that time? Nabanggit mo yung naganap nung panahon ni President Estrada, but even more recently, yung Mamasapano, no? We know that it was a very difficult time for people like yourself because, of course, you were working towards peace, but there are many others in the government who were no longer interested in peace because of the Mamasapano massacre.
Kaya nga na-delay yung pagpasa ng batas eh, kasi kung swing yung public opinion, yung election year yung 2016, di ba? 2015 yung Mamasapano. So, syempre, ayaw ng mga legislators na mantago na isang kanilang constituency. Still, nung pumasok si President Duterte, nakita rin naman niya, maski pa paano, yung value nitong peace deal na to na ihinto mo yung labanan doon sa pinakamalaking, pinakaorganisadong group. I mean, we're talking about 40,000 combatants concentrated in a defined territory. Kakaiba yan sa CPP-NPA, di ba, na disperse sila in small platoons. Pero ito, talagang nandun sila sa kanilang sariling kinagisnan na lupa. So, yung malaking difference dito. Kaya nga sinasabi natin noon, ipasa natin to kasi mas maraming sasali. You will radicalize the others who have lost hope in a peaceful political process in reforms that you can do through legislative reform, institutional reform, at saka power-sharing arrangements to really democratize then and to allow for inclusion of other excluded groups historically. So, ganun yung ano natin. Unfortunately, na-delay yan. Kaya nga, itong nangyari sa Marawi, meron pang mga resident events, di ba? Yung siege ng Butig Municipality ng Dawa Islamiyah, yung Maute Brothers, halimbawa. Nagsisignal na yan eh, na medyo meron na talagang bumigay dito sa more moderate track na nationalist, ethno-nationalist yung goal nila. Yung BIFF na humiwalay noong 2010 right after yung BOA AD na 2008, hindi na nga nahabol yun eh, sinubukan din habulin. So, nagtagal pa tong process na to kung hindi natin to na-achieve. Noong 2014 at a crucial time na lumalakas yung from Al-Qaeda to ISIS, talagang baka mas maraming grupo pa, mas marami pang individuals to go the more radical way na iba ng agenda, global world order, worldview, di ba? Ang kine-question nila, hindi lamang yung something that's really confined within our own capabilities to address as a republic made up of different constituencies.
You know, what you're saying now sounds very sensible, no? But in 2015, it was a very emotional time, and sometimes during very emotional times, after all, yung gobyerno namatayan ng SAF-44, no? They were considered heroes at that time. There was a lot of pressure to resume fighting and just to, you know, disregard the peace process. Pero noon, you were one of the voices saying, no, let's stay the course. Obviously, there was a bigger picture, which you just described, no? But everyone recalls, we recall, people were very emotional at that time, no? So, how did you navigate that? Was your gender ever an issue? Were these people calling for a resumption of fighting or to give up the peace process, questioning you for being soft on the MILF, etc.? I mean, how difficult was it for you?
Any woman put in the public sphere or the public space gets all of these sexist remarks. And that's true for everyone, maski presidente ka, prime minister ka, lahat sila naranasan nila yan. Kini-criticize ka, hindi lamang sa halimbawa dahil hindi sila nag-agree doon sa position mo, pero dahil sa pagiging babae mo. Usually, lumalabas talaga yung biases dyan. Mahina ka, you're a weak negotiator, o yung sleeping with the enemy, yung ganyang mga sexist comments, di ba? Pero, nung time na yun, ang nakikita natin, may technicalities talaga itong process na to. Binayolate ng staff ni General Napeñas at sa pagpaplano niya, yung very basic ceasefire protocols natin, which is basically to inform the military beforehand na meron silang gagawin ganitong operation. Kaya nga pati yung rescue operation ng military nung natrap na sila. Ano yan eh, last minute, tumawag lang siya to inform the military na meron nang natrap dito sa dalawang lugar. Ito yung sa 44, tapos sa kabila kung saan talaga yung actual operation. And remember that operation was precisely against yung si Marwan na yung violent extremist groups, di ba? So nakikita natin ang naging tension talaga doon ay yung primary aim na huliin itong si Marwan sa bigger peace process. And unfortunately, ang sinacrifice doon sa implementation ay yung malaking process. Kasi anybody who has done anything in Mindanao know na hindi yan typical operation given the multiplicity of armed groups residing in any one community, yung fluidity ng movements nila, and the difficult terrain na advantage talaga nila. Kasi alam nila yung terrain na yan eh. Bakit na-trap sa maputik na ilog yung ating SA-44? Diba? At bakit gising na yung mga tao ng alas 4 ng umaga? Kasi gising na sila dahil magdadasal sila ng maaga. Bakit pag may narinig silang putukan, lahat sila, ang impulse nila ay hawakan ng kanilang baril? Dahil kaya yun eh, alam nila na itong yung buong buhay nila, na ang feeling nila besieged sila lagi ng mga outsiders at kasama na dyan yung security forces ng Philippine government. So ganun yung buong context, specific context. Pero masasabi natin na sa buong mundo may tension talaga between counter-terrorism at saka yung isang alternative path, which is peaceful political settlement of the different armed conflicts. So ganun yon, medyo mahirap ipaliwanag. Na-besiege talaga si Pinoy dati doon, no? Bumagsak yung kanyang popularity rating. Pero ang masasabi ko kay Pinoy, he stayed the course. Naniniwala siya talaga dito, so wisdom nito. At maganda naman na nakita rin ng mga sumunod na presidente ang wisdom ng pagkaroon ng ganitong peace agreement with the Moro Islamic Liberation Front.
I want to pivot a bit and ask you about the New People's Army naman, no? Kasi that's an ongoing conflict. Hindi pa nare-resolve. There's an off and on peace process. You know, there was some news a while, some months ago that, you know, i-resume yung peace process with the NPA. You've been involved in successful peace negotiations with another armed group, the MILF. Any lessons for this other conflict, which lasted even longer, yung communist insurgency natin sa Pilipinas?
Importante talaga yung back-channeling muna eh, bago ka talaga umupo sa lamesa. Lalo na ngayon na may contradictions sa loob ng bawat partido. Sa CPP, NPA, NDF, hindi talaga natin alam kung saan na yung center of gravity nila, di ba? In terms of political leadership or decision-making. So, kailangan mo talaga munang hanapin yan eh, at saka makipag-usap sa kanila para sila mismo makonsolidate yung position nila. Sa AFP, meron kang dual track na nangyayari. Andiyan pa rin yung National Task Force on yung ano, against the communist insurgency na still doing some of the old ways, which is really through yung extrajudicial approaches, including killings, diba? And the regular anti-insurgency operations ng military, but on the one hand, meron ka supposedly this trap. So, there's still need really for each party to consolidate yung kanilang approach on all of this. Otherwise, you will keep getting these mixed signals. And it's not helping the process. One party loses trust increasingly against the other party kasi mixed signals ang nanggagaling sa isa't isa. And yung distrust reinforces distrust. Tapos yung public also loses trust in any political process kasi yung public importante dito eh. For them to believe that something can happen in this process positively so that they can put on their pressure as well dito sa negotiating parties. So marami ka pang preparatory work before you really plunge into yung a formal sitting down process. Every now and then okay lang magkita-kita kayo, mag-usap. Pero yung talagang maging tuloy-tuloy yan, kailangan ma-manage yung sarili nilang mga organization.
I want to ask you about one of your international endeavors, no? Kasi nabanggit mo sa ibang interview that you've been involved in a dialogue between Israelis and Palestinians in Jerusalem. Of course, that's an ongoing conflict right now. And we know that in recent months, there's been a severe global backlash against Israel for its, you know, military actions in Gaza, which is still ongoing. But, you know, if you talk to the pro-Israel side naman, and then including the Israeli embassy here in Manila, they will show you videos of what Hamas did in Israel back in October. Kaya nyo saying, ginawa ito ng Hamas sa Gaza. We don't have any choice. This is a kind of a survival for us, no? But of course, what they're doing is being opposed by a lot of peace advocates. So in retrospect, no, from your point of view, how should Israel have responded to the Hamas attack on their civilian communities inside Israel?
One is, if you have hostages, how do you negotiate the release of your hostages? Imagine na lang kung ang situation, no, may hostages ka. Do you really bomb the whole place to release your hostages? In fact, you're endangering your own hostages. And nakita nga natin, meron ng mga unfortunate incidents na nangyari where Israeli soldiers actually killed their own, the host, some, two hostages, di ba? Tapos if flash out mo yung tunnel, lalagyan mo ng seawater. Eh kung nasa tunnel yung hostages mo. It's so apparent now that there's a contradiction between the approach that Israel is doing do sa supposedly primary aim to release the hostages. Even the families of the hostages are angry with Netanyahu dahil nga precisely, hindi naman yun yung nagiging primary consideration dun sa war track ng Israel. Second, it happened because there are clear security issues being faced by both sides. Israel wants to exist as a state. Palestine no longer wants to be under an occupation and wants to recover, based on international law, yung kanilang homeland. So that's the bigger problem. At the end of the day, hindi naman to issue between the hostages and the political prisoners na ang dami-dami na. In the last few months, lalong dumami pa yung political prisoners na Palestinians, and not about Gaza, but also in the West Bank, where this occupation is really moving forward, not taking advantage of the war in Gaza. Yung mga settlers na nagdi-displace pa ng maraming Palestinians sa kanilang fields nila where they raised their sheep. I think it's even in the news the last few days. So yun yung issue dito. Ah. It's the bigger question of how can the two states really peacefully coexist, and then papasok ko sa usapin ng boundaries, which we experience in the case of the MLF. Kung magkakaroon ka ng Bangsamoro Autonomous Government, alin-alin ang mga kasama dyan, di ba? May tension between those nag-iba na yung demographics, naging majority non-Moro na. So, ganun din sa issue sa Israel and Palestine. Paano yun? Kung may settlements ka na dyan, yung dating territory na under the 1967 deal, wala na, nabawasan na ng gusto dahil inoccupy na nga ng Israel. So, it's going to be tough. Tough in terms of defining all of these things for the coexistence of two states, in Palestinian and Israel. But that's the only way you can solve, really find the finish to this. For the longest time, nakalimutan na ng international community yung ganong klaseng resolution. Napunta siya sa back burner. And then, at the same time, nagpatuloy yung expansion ng Israel sa kanilang settlement. And then, you have this situation now. How do you end it? You really have to stop the war, address the humanitarian situation, deal with the hostages and the political prisoners, and move on to address the real political settlement between the two. So, ganun, wala, there's no other way. Mananalo ba ang Israel dito sa gera nila? Ma-occupy ba nila talaga yung buong Gaza? Parang hindi rin mangyayari eh. Hindi rin papayag ang international community. Even the U.S. is saying, we will not support your invasion of Rafah. But now the U.S. sees that it cannot even control Israel.
I want to bring the conversation now closer to home. I mean, literally, your home, your family life, no? Kasi in a recent interview, you talked about your father, the late Dean Antonio Coronel, who was a prominent criminal lawyer for decades. And you talked about the time he convened like a family meeting to talk about taking on a new client, who was General Fabian Ver, who was then very close to then President Marcos, whom you, as a young activist and other members of your family, presumably including Sheila Coronel, your sister. So you talked about learning important lessons then, kasi your father was lawyering for the other side, kumbaga, no? Take us back to that time. I mean, walk us through that disagreement, because many families now are going through similar political disagreements. You know, the last presidential election divided many families who voted differently, who sided with different camps. And it was a very emotional election. It probably will not be the last time we'll have an emotional, you know, political episode that will be divisive. So tell us how that was handled between you and your family and your father.
Well, we were students at the University of the Philippines at the time. My sister and I, and even several cousins who were living at home, and basically all of us became activists. The whole clan on my mother's side were all my cousins. We were all active in the movement, no, against the dictatorship at the time. But what I saw was how other families were treating their children who chose to be politically active. I have friends who were really terrorized by their parents to stop their activism. Yung iba, kinikwento nila paano sila kinukulong sa bahay, paano sila basically halos tinatali para hindi makalabas. One good friend was whisked off to the United States just to take him out of the very dangerous situation for being politically active. But our parents allowed that. They knew we had people coming to the house, eating, staying on, meeting the whole night, you know, do sa library ng tatay ko noon, because he had this law office at home attached to our house. We would all be huddled there all through the night, just discussing and doing some of our stuff. And they allowed this. Pinabayaan nila kami na we were working the Collegian every Friday. Overnight kami sa Liwayway Press sa Quiapo. So pagdating dun sa personal choices, I think basically in-ingrained sa amin yung a very liberal framework. You can think freely, you do freely, you aim for what you want to be freely. And I didn't feel at the time that I was in a position to tell my father, you know, given what he wanted to do for himself as a professional lawyer. You know, my father was offered the job by Marcos, but he refused it because he did not see himself really being part of any government. Ang talagang profession niya is to be a lawyer and to excel in it, no? Lalo na sa interrogations. I think he was well known for how effective he was in cross-examination. Eventually, he even cross-examined Cory Aquino in the case against Louis Beltran. Yung sa when Louis Beltran wrote in his column that during the 87 coup, which one was that, Cory hid under the bed. And Cory was so intense. She pointed out that there's no under the bed. There's a picture in the newspaper where the bed actually was covered by wood, diba?
I remember. Oh.
And Louis Beltran was a friend of my father. They come over to our house, have breakfast. You know, many people, even si Burgos,
Joe Burgos of Joe Malaya. Burgos.
Yes, we grew up.
Editor of Malaya.
All sorts of guests in our house. Some of them becoming anti-Marcos, some of them very, very pro-Marcos. So that was the atmosphere when we were growing up. Some of them criminal clients of my lawyer. I'm my father lawyer. The lawyer, mahirap sabihin yung criminal law lawyer. Kung ano. But in any case, we saw all these kinds of people when we were growing up, and they sort of welcomed into the house, and our parents welcomed our friends too. So when the time came when he was asked to defend General Ver, of course General Olivas was a friend of the whole family is a friend of ours. They lived in the neighborhood. We played with their children. when we were young. But yeah, so who am for me at that time, he had to make the choice himself. And I knew he wanted it. And he allowed me to do what I wanted to do. And I could not stop him from also performing, which he liked to do as a lawyer in the court.
Okay, now you are a parent and a grandparent. How do you navigate or negotiate political disagreements within your own family? I know you have voting age grandchildren now, diba?
I have a granddaughter who's in college. I have three others na ganun, different ages. And of course, my children are all grown up. But probably their overexposure into politics sort of like made them backtrack a little bit on politics insofar as my children are concerned. My daughter is a forensic scientist at the Commission on Human Rights, but it's something that she does as a very technical job, not something political, which probably is what you need in terms of, you know, very independent investigation. Otherwise, I used to think, how could they have let us do what we did nung bata kami? Nung naging parent ka na, parang you wanted to be a little stricter, di ba? Is it because the times have changed? Criminality has increased? Pero dati, we were driving our yellow car, si Sheila and I, magpapalitan kami sa paggamit, almost everywhere, going to different places during that time. No? So parang we were given the freedom, and I'd like to say we handled our freedom well. As a parent, you fear that that freedom will not be handled well by your children. So you had to sort of temper yourself also. And they're fine, they're fine. Iba na lang talaga yung kanilang orientation ngayon. But I try to bring them into some activities. Like I exposed my granddaughter, the eldest one. She stayed in Cambodia for some time to help out in the Peace Museum. Because in a way, very sheltered na rin yung kanilang upbringing. Eh. So you need to push them out of their comfort zones as well.
Okay, gusto ko nang balikan yung sinabi mo kanina na pagbabae ka in whatever position, wherever you are, no, at talaga kikwestiyonin yung iyong strength. So it was a risk for President Aquino to appoint you to the peace panel in the first place, and then naging chief ka eventually, no? Nakikusapin ba yung iyong gender? I mean, did he have a conversation with you? Did anyone have a conversation with you beforehand na, uy, get ready? You know, people are gonna question you, lalo na itong mga kausap mo, puro mga hardened dyan sa armed struggle, etc. Or was this already assumed? Na alam mo na yon, because, you know, you're a professor, babae ka, you know, so you went to UP, so alam mo na lahat yon. I mean, did that ever come into the conversation? Part 1 pa lang yan, Podmates, ng aming kwentuhan ni Professor Miriam Coronel Ferrer. Tune in tomorrow for Part 2.